Netcasting from Chicago, Los Angeles, and Sydney, you're listening to this week's FX Podcast from FXGuide.com.
Hi, and welcome to a special FX Podcast from FX Guide. I'm Mike Seymour. I'm here at Anaheim, 2013 SIDGRAPH, and it's, as I'm recording this Sunday night, about 11:30, close to midnight, I guess. I've just come back from the FX PhD meetup, so big hi to all the people that turned out for the drinks after the fast forward papers. It was a great, great night. What we're going to be doing this week at SIDGRAPH is trying to give you a lot of coverage of what's going on in various forms. We'll have some really serious written pieces, but we also wanted to do kind of breaking news. And the best way we thought to do that was to have a series of smaller pieces rather than just one giant piece that's a summary at the end. Now, I guess FX Guide's been kind of known now for doing more in-depth pieces and going a bit beyond the press releases. So we've actually got a lot of stuff lined up this week. People have been approaching us with exclusives to be able to break stories because of this fact that we can sit down and discuss things in more detail. So as I'm sitting here on a rather kind of miserable, actually, Los Angeles, or I should say Anaheim night, it's actually really interesting, the mood here at SIDGRAPH. There's a lot of interesting stuff coming out, but the show really hasn't opened yet. All of the trade show stuff won't happen until Tuesday. Some of the papers happened today. Certainly I was on a panel on open source, which was very interesting, and I'll try and bring you more on that. But the individual speakers from Disney, from Pixar, from DreamWorks, covering a range of products from Disney, and also work that's being done in terms of the common renderer that is Blender, that's in part of the open source community. All of these groups were represented by key speakers, CTOs, and representatives from those companies. And hearing the experiences of Pixar, from DreamWorks, etc., about how they've worked with the open source community was just fascinating. Unfortunately, due to the studio involvement in that production session, we couldn't record it, nor could SIDGRAPH. So we'll be talking more about that. But actually, what we're going to do is follow up with those individual companies, do more on Blender, do more certainly on some of the stuff. We've done a reasonable amount of stuff on some of the projects like Olympic, but I've got to say the open subdev stuff from Pixar is just fascinating. The open subdivision stuff is actually going into Maya, and that's going to be shown here at SIDGRAPH, so that's one of the things that we'll be following up on. But tonight we're actually going to start by talking to the guys from Fabric Engine. Now, and again, in an FX Guide exclusive, we've got to sit down with them before they announce tomorrow what's going to be going on with the company. What we tend to sort of do at FX Guide is keep an ear out for stuff when we're talking about productions. We kind of track, I guess, what people are doing. Of course, it feeds into what courses we run over at FX PhD, but it just gives us a really good insight. When we start hearing things coming from several sources, that's when we really sort of start to sit up and take notice. And if any of you read Action Beats, Six Scenes from the White House Down article that Ian Fales wrote, you'll note that there was a section in there where Hybrid was talking about their work. Now, these are XSI guys, and they were talking about White House Down, but there's a part in that where they're going on about how they were approaching things and what they were doing. And they get to a point where they're discussing deep images and Nuke, and they ended up creating an in-house custom standalone application using the creation platform from Fabric Engine. Fabric Engine has this creation platform, which is pretty much, as the name implies, something that they use to build other things. Now, I think the name Fabric Engine, as you'll hear in the interview, is a bit misleading in the sense that it tends to be something that would imply that they're a cloth sim company, but they're absolutely not. The idea is they're weaving together elements to produce really powerful engines that go into things. So in this particular case, for that film, White House Down, what they were doing was producing stuff that was working with Nuke in terms of solving the render problems with the deep images. But here at SIDGRAPH, they're showing crowd simulation work and a bunch of other things. So a talented group of people. Not unsurprising if you read that article, the people behind Fabric Engine are actually primarily XSI, Softimage, and Autodesk people. And many of them were involved in the ICE side of XSI. So that's of real interest. But the other thing that's news here at SIDGRAPH that, again, we got to cover exclusively is that Mark Petit, who used to be, as you know, probably a very senior player in Autodesk, especially in the media and entertainment area. Mark Petit has not only joined them as a strategic advisor, he's now chairman of the board and actually invested in the company directly. So when we start getting that sort of convergence that we're hearing from people just around SIDGRAPH and before, how interested they are in the sort of stuff that Fabric Engine's doing, we hear it coming up in projects and we start seeing people investing in it and getting really personally involved in the company, it sort of starts to become of great interest. I do think that Fabric Engine has a little bit of a problem in trying to communicate what it is that they do. If you go to their website, a little confusing. They have stuff there about the fact that they do consulting, which was something they really just did in the early days to kind of, from what I can gather, help people set up so that TDs could put in this creation platform code, which at its core, I guess, is kind of middleware in the sense that it's providing very fast sparsing of networks and relationship stuff. It helps with building up other things. And as you'll hear in the interview, this facilitates them doing a bunch of other work. But as a consequence, I really struggled in this interview to get them to articulate in a kind of one sentence pitch what it is that the company actually does. The best way to understand it, I think, is to think of it as a way of amping up and souping up the capabilities of something like Maya and producing tools for it and in it that allow it to function at a much higher level because of the multi-threading work that this team has done. Even XSI Icework was done inside kind of an older platform, a historically, not that XSI was that old, I guess, but it was carrying forward a bit of legacy code and stuff. The approach with Fabric Engine is to say, can we do the most hardcore multi-threading work right out of the gate and thus get great performance? And then if we come in and you can plug that into your pipeline, you don't have to get rid of Maya. You don't have to get rid of Nuke. You don't have to throw out the whole pipeline. You can just plug this in and that'll speed up things in Lighting, in Scene Assembly, in some of their other plugins. This is all happening at SIDGRAPH at multi-level. So on the main website of FX Guide, you'll see we list some of the things that they're doing and places that you can see them if you are here at SIDGRAPH. We've also got some videos there showing the work that that the company does. But it does take a little bit of work, I think, to kind of get where they're coming from. But by the same token, they're quite interesting in that I think they're pretty unique in playing for this ground. Now, whether it proves to be vastly profitable or not in the long term, I don't know. It could be that this is a stepping stone for them to producing a full application. It could be that no one's ever tried this before and it's going to grow. Certainly the company isn't carrying a lot of overhead. There's only about 7 in the team. So they're just basically sort of producing amped up high performance stuff that allows companies to produce much more cost effective, effective and innovative work inside their existing workflow. So definitely a company worth checking out. Well, as I said, we got to talk to the guys pretty much exclusively before SIDGRAPH started here at FX Guide. So we recorded this interview just a couple of hours ago. It's between Mark Petit, who is, as I say, somebody that's invested in the company, ex-Autodesk and now chairman of the board, but also with Paul Doyle. Now, Paul is the CEO and one of those people that was the founders that came over from the XSI team. Now, let's cross to that interview now. So, what the heck is Fabric Engine?
So at the base, Fabric Engine, the reason why I got very interested in the technology is that it solves the performance problem that we see in a number of pipelines. You know, lack of performance that you see in a number of legacy applications, the fact that they cannot fully exploit modern compute technology means for the artist that they have to work on lower resolutions or on proxy to make it work. So it makes the creation process much slower. So what Fabric Engine brings is first, humongous performance, full leverage of the existing compute architecture for whether you're doing rigging, whether you're doing lighting, whether you're doing all those things. So it integrates nicely in existing applications, and it brings the frame rate, it brings the tools for the artists.
People that are trying to work out what Fabric Engine is mm-hmm. have said to us that they think it wants to be just a fully 3D system, but just hasn't got there yet. Is that accurate, or is it?
No, I think what Fabric, the way it's engineered, is high performance and brings the flexibility. It wants to solve the problem of moving data around portable rigs. The fact that you can visualize your procedural geometry in multiple applications, like you'll see it during the videos, you can visualize things in Maya, in Houdini, in Nuke. I think it brings a flexibility to the pipeline that's very important.
But doesn't that place it in an awkward position of being neither the full solution nor just a simple plug-in? It's because it's a relatively unique product in that sense.
Yeah, it's actually a very, very original positioning because It solves a very important problems, and it does it by integrating itself into existing applications. So it's very similar to what you see, for example, with game engines, where you know you bring a complete solution that you can actually, a platform that you will use to build your final product. So I think Fabric brings you this flexibility in the existing pipeline this way.
But it isn't as if the company is just a company that sells a plugin. Like there's an entire consulting side to the company that integrates things into pipelines, isn't there?
No, actually, it's not required because the platform is very mature. It's based on a language called KL, which is very, very accessible to TDs and to technical artists. And so what we're seeing with existing customers is they're capable of embracing the technology on their own, highly integrating into Maya and Nuke as an application, and so they can write the level of customization that they need, and they get the level of performance that they need without much support from the Fabric guys. It's a very small company. They could not handle a big servicing component to their business.
Well, what's your role then?
Well, I'm an investor. I came across this company and I thought it was solving a very, very important problem. I'm the chairman of the board and I'm a very engaged investor. So I help them in guiding the company.
So the company's been going for what, 3 years or
mm-hmm.
so?
Yeah.
So when did you first hear about them?
Well, I mean, they were people. I mean, Montreal is a small city. They're ex-Autodesk employees. I got to know them and to work at them back at Autodesk. So they set up their own company. And, you know, I didn't pay too much attention until I left. And then back at this spring, you know, we heard all of those things about what was happening in the industry. And then I met Paul and we started to discuss. And I realized that over the past 3 years, they actually had built an extremely valuable technology component. They actually had cracked this notion of bringing the performance to the pipeline, bringing the interactivity. And I got very excited the way they were approaching it, by not trying to supplement anything, by integrating this on the existing pipeline, making the adoption relatively easy. I thought it was a very smart idea, and I put my retirement money into it.
So who would be the archetypal client? If you were to sort of say, this is the sweet spot of mm-hmm. the client, is it a large studio? Is it a 20 to 30 person shop? Is it a single designer?
I think we're seeing interest across the board. The large scale studios are looking at ways of going beyond C++. We've all seen the big studios, you know, solving the problem by writing C++ plugins. And that creates a bottleneck between the TDs and the R&D department. So those customers come to us and say, it looks like a very interesting way for me to remove this bottleneck and bring high-performance compute to every artist by using this KL language. So, you know, writing all the custom plugins that they do. The smaller studio look at it as you know, they're interested in the applications. Application like Stage, you know, which is a scene assembly application, or Horde, which is an animation system that's focused on previs, brings a lot of game concept like locomotion. So for those smaller studio, they look at the application, you know, kind of a problem solving approach. And the bigger studio look at is as a very efficient tool to deploy custom tools within their pipelines.
So is there a rendering component or is it just meant to feed into another type of renderer?
No, it has a rendering component. It's a super high performance rendering engine, which actually, because it's a critical part of interactive and iterative workflow. You have to show motion blur that's going to match the offline render. You have to present film quality motion blur so that you can evaluate your animation. So they wrote the renderer in KL using their own high-performance language, which is first a good validation of the language itself. And then it brings a level of preview when you see at the real-time live presentation at this SIGGRAPH, when you see, you know, hordes of dinosaurs running in real-time to Maya viewport. That's only possible when you get high-performance animation and high-performance rendering. And so Fabric brings those two things together.
Well, let's discuss that in terms of GPUs and CPUs for a second. Mm-hmm. There's a number of philosophies out there. I'm just going to paraphrase, but we've got CPU mirrored or attempted to be mirrored with a GPU so that you would get the same results. Then you've got some hybrid approaches where they're saying, well, I'll do most of it on the CPU and give things to the GPU to do, and then I'll give it back and that'll just speed it up. And then there are, of course, GPU renderers that are just, you know, CUDA hardcore GPU. Mm-hmm. And I guess you go even further and say there are then cloud versions of almost both of those. Where does this fit? Is it just local workstation preview rendering?
The core of the technology is based on LLVM. So it will give you super high performance multi-threaded application on CPUs. And we, you know, our CTO, Phil Taylor, is actually very deep into those things. We have very brilliant engineers that are capable of really harnessing this environment and extracting the maximum power of it. For example, a good example of it, LLVM, it will generate machine code that's actually adapted to the machines you're running on. So there's this whole level of multi-CPU performance. The other thing we're doing is we're starting to look at GPUs. A lot of work went into evaluating CUDA and OpenCL, but we think that, you know, moving stuff around is a very, very hard problem between CPU and GPU. So we already have a huge investment with support from AMD into a unified memory architecture, the HSA architecture. And we could expect that a language like KL would be, you know, accelerated 10 to 100 times when running in those kind of a unified memory architecture like HSA.
And so we're really... thought GPU would be completely in your target sites because you want fast, responsive, interactive participation. Yep. That's what sort of GPU promises.
Yeah, but remember, we're tightly integrated with a Syngraph. So the problem if using discrete GPUs right now is the memory transfer. It's very hard to predict when you will need the data. So that's why the early tests we've done on unified memory architecture are overly impressive. I mean, it's really mind-blowing the kind of performance you have because you do not have to move the data around and you can actually code like, you know, the right set of like the rigs onto your GPU and different evaluation like the physics on your CPU or vice versa. You have a lot of flexibility in managing this. So we are strong believers in this.
Dealing with that scene graph is at the core of what makes the product sing, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. The speed of evaluation, and it's all like very careful and complete engineering about having optimized data structure, about having a super fast evaluation so that you can get the performance. So it's really at the core of what it is here.
So can I loop back on that question about who the sort of target? Because, I mean, it's not a big company. You can't be servicing everyone in every segment.
No, we service the people who need customization. That's basically, you know, people who actually feel the need to write C++ code in a product like Maya or Nuke to actually go faster. We have a solution for them that's using the KL language that's going to bring a solution. That's really number one. Number two is, you know, when you look at the Horde demonstration, you can see, and it's actually a very good example of what we mean by portable data, portable code, is the same product, Horde, runs into Softimage and into Maya. And it brings, you know, locomotion controllers, all game concept to the problem of previs and crowd animation. And it's super fast. So this is the kind of a... Some customer will be interested in those ready-made application. A lot of other customers would be interested in using the platform. The platform, they go off. We have customers. Unfortunately, we cannot announce everything here at SIGGRAPH. You know how it is with those customers. But we have people, you know, buying into the platform and deploying it today in their pipeline just to boost their R&D process. An example we can mention is going to be that the user group is a hybrid. In Montreal, they used the technology to build their own deep compositor, you know, and they were capable very quickly as a small studio in Piedmont, Quebec, to develop like really studio level kind of custom tools to accelerate their pipeline.
And in fact, did they use that on White House Down? Is that there?
Yes, it was for White House Down. They'll be presented at the user group. It's actually a great story to see the kind of tool they were able to build in a few weeks with the technology.
Yeah, because to do what they wanted in that film, they needed to get around the issue of the pipeline in terms of volumetrics, in terms of compositing and stuff.
Definitely.
And it's really, in that case, a kind of a plug-in, effectively, to the pipeline, but it amps it up at the same time.
Yeah, definitely.
So the question I have to ask you is this an opportunity because products like Maya and others are showing their age, or is this an opportunity regardless of the application because it's not opportunistic so much as it is just brand new technology?
It's, you know, independently of the application, I think it solves the problem of, you know, in VFX you need to customize things. It's, you know, it's the level of complexity you have to deal with is enormous, and there is no pipeline when you can actually do 100% of the work with off-the-shelf tools. So customization is very expensive. We'll see a lot of studios having a problem with the cost of R&D recently. You know, I think it compounds the margin problem that we're seeing in the industry. So being able to have TDs write high-performance code and be able to customize those platforms to a level that was reserved to C++ engineer before, I think brings a lot of value to them. It's a great opportunity.
So can you talk to me about the Shotgun integration? Mm-hmm. How does that work?
Well, so I think it was very interesting for Fabric to work with Shotgun. I think it gives you a glimpse into the pipeline of the future where, you know, all the data lives, you know, behind the pipeline toolkit, you know, the demonstration, and you can see on the video, it's actually doing scene assembly by querying data into Shotgun. And I think that's a really powerful way of thinking about the pipeline of the future, because you get a level of everything is off the shelf, everything runs off servers, you know, in the cloud. And then you can have scenes, highly complex scenes. You know, solvers are stored in the database and not bolted into your application. You know, the data is portable. The rigs, same rig, will run into your DCC, but will run into your renderer. And it brings a whole level of flexibility to the pipeline. It reduces the need to bake everything out, you know, because you can actually carry around a programmable representation of virtually everything: animation data, geometry, and even image processing. So that's, you know, for me, something that's very, very interesting to see how those two things come together. They're actually in the same booth at SIGGRAPH. So it's, you know, for me, it's the new generation right there.
So what exactly is Fabric Engine as a company? Like, what's the elevator pitch of what it is that you are?
We provide a platform for building custom tools in the graphics industry. I think we can kind of break that down into layers. I think it's kind of helpful to understand the name in the first place, because when we came out, people assumed, is this
a cloth sim?
I think we were being a bit clever with our name. I think if you think of fabric is a weave of many threads woven together, and an engine is something that does this automatically. So our notion was, well, our core technology is a multi-threading or a high-performance computation engine. And what we're doing is automating that as much as possible so that it's abstracted away, so that regular people that are developers that are comfortable with Python can actually access that kind of performance. You know, and the key for us is always best-in-class performance with that abstraction, but no compromise on the performance we're attaining.
Okay, but if we just take it to sort of look at a base level, like you talk about you're a platform, but mm-hmm. I mean, you're not a complete end-to-end solution. But it's the intention then that you work in conjunction with some existing apps.
Yeah, our view is, I think it's twofold actually. I think our intention is, it doesn't need to be a binary decision. You don't have to go to a studio and say, here's this other product, stop using Maya because you've got this thing. Because that's crazy, because you have thousands of artists well-trained and comfortable there. What they really want is a way to get high-performance tools built in there quickly and easily. So that's kind of our starting premise with studios. I think that the notion that you can provide a generic solution that solves every production scenario is impossible. So instead, what we target is saying there's a whole bunch of things that you see consistently implemented across the industry costing an awful lot of money, and that can be commoditized. That can be built by a company like Fabric and said, here's the 80% solution, the bit that doesn't really apply to what you're doing on any particular production. And that last 20% is really the particular shot or commercial or game that's being built, and that's the bit that you can't provide as a vendor. And so what we're doing is empowering studios to just focus on that bit where they really get their value.
So you were doing stuff with ICE before Fabric Engine, is that right?
Yeah, so I was at Softimage in a sales role. Nearly the whole team is ex-Softimage and also ex-Autodesk. So a lot of the team that did the design and the core architecture on ICE, as well as development and subsequent kind of evangelizing of that, they work for us now. They work for
who Patrick. Are we talking about?
So you have Phil Taylor. His background is he did a toolkit called Cat for Max, which is an animation tool, and then he was brought in. His company was acquired by Avid, moved into Softimage. He did a lot of the front end stuff, so things like ICE Kinematics were kind of driven by him, but subsequently developed by the team at Autodesk. Jerome Couture-Gagnon is probably one of the better known guys on the Softimage team. I think he was involved in the geometry system. He's architected the whole real-time renderer for us in KL. Peter Zion was also on the core architecture team. Helgi Mathi is a sort of well-known production guy, worked at Omation on Barnyard, and then he was at Six Birds in Spain, but he was also a Softimage guy.
How many are there in?
Six engineers and me. So, like, directing, you know. I think it's important to note that we have kind of broad spectrum skills in the team, but our focus is on performance, and I think that's a heavy engineering focus. We're now at the stage where we're starting to look at significant deals, and that means a transition for the company as we move from pure engineering into, you know, how we get that out, how we support that effectively.
Well, if people could get confused by the name, they can also be confused that they don't understand why it is that, for example, you're presenting stuff here on what looks like crowd simulations.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work? Explain what it is that you're showing here at SIGGRAPH to do with crowds and how that kind of fits in what we're talking about.
Sure. I mean, sort of step back and say, Everything we do is focused on performance. And if you solve performance, you start solving problems differently. And if you look at the traditional approach to crowds, it's predominantly an offline process. Decision-making becomes what we call backloaded, and it's expensive. A director comes in and says, I need to see this change, and then a simulation happens, and then hours or days later, he can come and say, that's not what I was thinking at all. When you solve performance, you can work in real time. So what we do with Horde is, you know, Phil has a lot of experience in procedural locomotion and animation systems. And so he's built a way to essentially encapsulate a character, have procedural animation on that character so it adapts to an environment. But that's a high quality. We're talking, you know, film quality rigs in our demos. I think when you see what we do on the floor, it's pretty high end. But that integrated in a way that it's interactive. So you're working within Maya, you're drawing paths on the floor, and if you don't like what's happening or you need to remove an agent, that happens immediately. And that the quality of what's being shown on screen is sufficient that if you're sat with a DP, that he can make a reliable decision with you. And I think people haven't seen this kind of performance before, and they certainly haven't seen this running in Softimage and then running in Maya, you know, the same application embedded and portable between the two.
Yeah, I mean, for the company to succeed, you've had to be basically a company that likes working well with others. Shotgun.
Yes, yeah. I think that the days of monolithic single application pipelines are long gone. I think if you look at the initiatives that the industry has driven themselves for things like Alembic and OpenColor.io and those standards, there's a certain amount of them saying we don't want single vendor control anymore, we want a mixed pipeline. And so we look at a company like Shotgun and say, look, they're solving, you know, the back-end problem extremely well. Our expertise is around performance and tools, and we can work closely with companies like that and build a high-value solution for the customer. If we're trying to solve that ourselves, it would be a poorer result for the customer.
So tell me how you're going to be sort of, I mean, where you're going to be appearing at SIDGRAPH, because there are both technical papers as there are, you know, you're appearing on other people's booths and stuff.
There's a few things. So we're on Shotgun's booth showing Stage, which is our scene assembly and lighting tool. Showing that with, you know, tons of geometry and how it fits with the Shotgun story, and particularly the toolkit story with Shotgun. Then we're presenting it real-time live. So that's a shorter presentation, but, you know, to a big audience. And I think what's interesting there is that's predominantly game engine companies. And then we have two user groups, one on the Tuesday morning, which is around Splice, which is how we embed our core engine into other applications. It's kind of very TD focused and just a low friction way to take advantage of the performance we get without ever having to leave your application. One of the problems you see right now is that there's an issue where studios are putting money into R&D to build a tool, say, within Maya, and then they build the same tool again with Houdini, and then they implement it again elsewhere. And if they move application down the line, that's just sunk cost. And what we're offering is a way of saying, well, you do that R&D work in Maya, and that can then be, that tool can be encapsulated and run, say, as a procedural geometry tool within Arnold and also within Nuke. So you start seeing a single cost of R&D that's fully portable and also future-proof, this sense that what they're doing now with this low-friction option, down the line they may decide they want to run standalone using the creation platform, or there's another application appears that we don't even know about yet.
So if you're appearing at Real Time Live, the first thing I'd think is it's a fully GPU application.
No, I think that we use the GPU for things like our shaders, but our render is completely built with KL, so it's a CPU-focused solution right now. I think down the line, as you look at emerging technologies, and the notion of CPU and GPU with a shared memory architecture, then the GPU gets a lot more interesting. But the issue we have right now is if you have data on a CPU and you have a GPU that you want to do work, as soon as you get into complex applications, you have to move data back and forth, and that tends to just remove any benefit you've got from GPU acceleration. It just kills it.
Especially as the cores go up.
Yes, yeah. Where it gets interesting is we've done tests with Horde, which is the real-time crowd stuff. If we do a raw compute test on AMD's HSA architecture versus what we get on a 16-core workstation, our KL code automatically being targeted to this architecture. The developer, the customer, makes no changes to this code. It just will run faster there. And we see a 10x boost in performance just in raw compute. That translates, when you get into complex applications, to more like 5x. But you're still talking about a huge jump in performance for what's essentially, you know, a hardware change. The customer's not going to be changing code to take advantage of this. And that's really where we see the future happening on the hardware side. You know, the things we care about are real-time rendering because of how that relates to things like virtual production and previs and this front-loading so you have high-quality shot preview. We think animation hasn't moved on in a decade. It's the equivalent when you look at modeling of saying modeling today is still box-based and sculpting never happened. And you look at rigging and animation and say the tools have not moved on. So we think there's something we can do there. So Horde is kind of our first sort of view along that. And then we look at things like scene assembly and shot layout. And there's a performance issue there that so many of the problems in production are just a performance issue that you can't see the high quality version of assets because the application chugs when you try and do it. So you end up with wasted iterations happening because the animator sat there, for instance, and he's got a lightweight puppet. And when he actually sees the effect of the animation on the full rig, it's useless. And that's what I mean when you say you solve performance, you solve these problems because you have a higher quality and a real-time iteration. And you no longer have this make a change, wait, review, make a change, and instead it's instantaneous.
Okay, so different companies come up with actually very sort of specific things that they're trying to target to solve things, right? Like OpenSubdiv solves a problem with a level of abstraction between their like lower poly count geometry and higher, or you get somebody else coming up with something like a very fast interactive renderer for lighting, which is just doing really high ray counts. We're talking in sort of a little bit abstract concepts. Like, where are you getting this performance benefit from? It can't just be that you guys are awfully clever.
It's a big part of it. I think not so much me, but the team that
I work
with.
Well, okay, then what are you awfully clever guys doing other than just writing super fun code?
I think that when you look at something like the architecture of most DCC applications predates, the design of these applications predates the introduction of even dual-core CPUs. Whereas you compare that to something like Fabric and some like I think Clarisse as well is a good example, where the application has been designed when you know about multi-core CPUs, you know about the capability of the GPU, you know that eventually cloud-based computation is going to be required. And so you start doing things like designing your scene graph and your dependency graph so that it's fully multi-threaded at all times.
In fact, that is a real benefit of what you do, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think as well, when you have a guy like our chief architect, all he's done for 3 years is work on multi-threading. And we're also standing on the shoulders of giants here. You look at something like LLVM, which enables us to dynamically compile on target. LLVM means that we don't have to worry about compilation, and we actually don't even worry that much about optimization of the code when we're building things because LLVM just handles it. We kind of joke it makes for lazy programmers because you can spend time tweaking your code, but LLVM is going to do a better job. And these things didn't exist 5 or 10 years ago.
So you're saying that it's a series of strong technical but small steps as opposed to a single underlying technology that's giving you the speed advantage?
Yeah, I mean, I think when Phil approached me to start the company 3 years ago, he came to me and said, look, if you think about what ICE does well, it understands modern architectures, there's an abstraction here that's valuable, but it's within an older application structure. And if you go all out from day one and kind of be bold with your choice and say, well, we're just going to build for modern architecture across the board, and it might mean there's some issues because we can't cover certain legacy things, but we're going for where we see the technology heading. I think that there's a core design that was there from day one that enables all of the performance, and that's the notion of the multi-threading engine and a high-level language that communicates with that. And that's the underlying performance benefit that drives everything else.
So aren't you up against the problem that I'm sitting somewhere in a facility saying, look, this all sounds great, and I totally agree that you're more high performance than what we've got now, except for what we've got now kind of works, and we've got so much stuff built around it, and we've just got so much momentum and inertia with what we've got that to stop and to rejig things is just something that we're not going to do right now. In other words, breaking in is kind of difficult.
I think that was true before when we were just offering Creation Platform, because it essentially required a fairly significant investment to build even your initial tool. But the last 2 months we've been announcing Splice, which is how it's essentially a zero friction way of getting our stuff into existing applications. So we're talking about piecemeal acceleration of a rig, for instance, or just one deformer that gets updated. It doesn't have to be wholesale change. So what we're finding when we go and talk to R&D teams and TDs is that for them this is a huge boon, because they're not having to go to their supervisor and say, we need to spend a ton of money on new software and no one's going to be productive because we have to change everything. And instead they can say, I'm going to change these things, and if it keeps going well over time, eventually the whole rig might have been written with KL. But it's a progression rather than a wholesale change.
Well, big thanks to the guys from Fabric Engine for sitting down with us. Well, we have a bunch of great stuff coming up, as I said. We had the papers fast forward this evening. Now, one of the articles we've already published on SIGGRAPH was from what I call Day Zero. It's really the day before SIGGRAPH, which was DigiPro. And in that, we were looking and discussing production R&D. One of the stories in that was about this terrific technique that Pixar has developed, built on some SIGGRAPH papers, where you provide animation, like a properly rendered piece of animation, and then you get an artist to sit down and every about 14 frames, hand draw over the top of it. And the computer then interpolates from that hand-drawn stuff and produces a seamless and non-flickering continuous animation in the style of that hand-drawn piece, but using the actual animation from the underlying character animation. Now, that's something I want to mention now, because, in fact, at the papers fast forward, we got to see that that is going to be published here on Wednesday as a paper at SIGGRAPH. So if you were interested in that story in FX Guide and you're here at SIGGRAPH, please check out that paper. I think it's on Wednesday. Also, on Wednesday, there is this terrific thing called Dailies. Now, we've got a piece on FX Guide about it you can read, but it's, I think, 44 artists in 90-second each bursts giving a rundown on a particular aspect of one particular shot that's really interesting. And I've been speaking to a lot of people that have gone to Dailies, been involved with the production of Dailies, and it's just fascinating. So can't recommend that enough. It's going to be on at Wednesday, I think in the afternoon or the evening, but if you look it up on SIGGRAPH. Heap more stuff coming. Also, I just want to thank everybody for the huge response this last week that's just finishing at FX Guide. Amazing. It's like, I think, the third biggest week of traffic we've ever had in the history of the company. Also, I want to particularly thank the PhD members. Of course, a lot of the stuff we've been covering over at FX Guide relates to the stuff we're doing this new term in FX Guide. So, for example, we had a big rendering story on FX Guide. And in PhD, we have a story, an actual interview with Marcus from Arnold discussing the new stuff in Arnold. And that interview is only available inside FX PhD. If you haven't checked out PhD, or it's been a while since you've checked out PhD, you should really give it another visit, because it is absolutely just grown in leaps and bounds. And we can't thank enough the professors that have been contributing there. Really first-class stuff. And I've got to say, I had somebody come up to me today, as it tends to happen every day at a show like SIGGRAPH, and says, hey, I just want to say hello and thanks, because I owe my job with X company to the fact that I did courses with you at FX PhD, and I wouldn't have had this without you, so thanks so much. And, I mean, that makes it all the more worthwhile for John and I and the team here when that happens. On behalf of everyone here at Anaheim, which is Jeff, John, and myself, and the team in Sydney and Chicago who are editing these programs to get them out to you for the next morning, I just want to say a big thanks, and thank you guys for supporting us and doing everything you can, both in FX Guide and, of course, in fxphd.com. Well, until next time we talk, don't forget we've got a bunch of exclusives this week already locked in, so keep listening and, of course, read the articles online at the site. I'm Mike Seymour. Thanks so much.
Please let us know if you have any suggestions for stories or future podcasts. You can reach us by clicking the Contact Us link at the top of the homepage. This podcast is copyright FX Guide LLC. Broadcast or redistribution is prohibited without the expressed written consent of FX Guide.